Let's start off with our motivation. And again, feeling the preciousness of this life and the incredible opportunity we have to practice the Dharma, that most living beings don't have, including most other human beings, who either have no access to the Dharma, no interest in the Dharma, or various other hindrances. So our fortune is nothing to get arrogant or complacent about, because it arose simply due to causes. And when that causal energy is over, the results change as well. So we're not guaranteed to have this fortune forever. And for that reason, it's important to continue to create the causes to meet the Dharma, study it, practice it, and so on. And it's also important, with respect to our Dharma practice, that we're not doing it just for our own benefit. We're not just trying to get out of samsara because we're fed up with it ourselves, but really feeling connected to all other living beings and having a very sincere, heartfelt wish that they be happy, not the mundane kind of happiness, but really the bliss and joy that comes through spiritual realizations. Then let's cultivate the aspiration to bring that about. And in order to bring it about, we have to become fully enlightened Buddhas ourselves. So thus the bodhicitta motivation to become a fully enlightened Buddha for the benefit of all living beings. And so we're going to listen to teachings tonight to learn how to practice the different kinds of mindfulness, because that is a practice that is very essential on the path to enlightenment. Had a very full day today, do you think? with Dallas's ordination and so many guests coming and really so much happiness and real rejoicing. And just a little anecdote. Our plum tree, I walk by it every time to and from the meditation hall. And so yesterday I passed it on my way in to for the Bhikshuni Posada, our twice monthly confession. No plums on the ground. When I came out, I walked back past it, and there were plums all over the place. It was kind of like the tree was very pleased with the Bhikshuni Posada. And then the same thing happened today with the, was it the ordination? Yeah, it was the ordination. I walked there, the plums had all been gone. And I came back, and this was before the wind started. Lots of plums. Yeah. So really, it was like the tree was celebrating as well. It was quite sweet. Okay, so we're going to continue talking about mindfulness. Last week I was talking about the preparatory practices to the four establishments of mindfulness, because there's the preparatory practices and than the actual practice. And so part of the preparatory practice was practicing mindfulness, or also that other mental factor I spoke of introspective awareness in our daily life, in all of our activities, when we're coming, when we're going, when we're standing and sitting, speaking, and everything else. Okay, so to be aware of what we're doing, to be aware of how we're doing it, to be aware of if it's an appropriate thing to be doing at that time and place and with those particular people around us. Okay, so that's a very all-encompassing practice that goes on all day long, no matter where we're living or what else is going on in our lives. Okay, so that's part of like the preparatory practice. It's going to help us get going. Then there's another aspect of the preparatory practice which constitutes some meditations on the breath. And these meditations are from the Abhidharmakosha, the Treasury of Knowledge by Vasubandhu. And there's six kind of breathing meditations. They're also taught in the context of mindfulness of the body, because the breath is part of the body. But it seems they're also spoken of as part of the preparatory practices, because focusing on the breath can really help settle the mind and prepare it for more in-depth meditation. And as we were discussing before, when we do the four foundations of mindfulness, we're doing them not for so much for the development of serenity, although that comes, but specifically for the development of insight, okay, into understanding the real nature of reality, not just for developing concentration. So in these six types of breathing meditation, they start out kind of simple, and then they get progressively more difficult. But they're quite interesting, and things that you might want to work with over some time. Okay, so the first one is called counting the breath. So here you begin by relaxing your body and mind, and you'll notice very often when I lead meditation, I start people off with a body relaxation, you know, focusing on just feeling yourself sitting here, then being aware of the sensation in your feet and your legs and relaxing tension, being aware of sensations in your belly. Lots of people tighten up their belly without even being aware of it, okay? So being aware of sensations in your belly, relaxing them, being aware of sensations in your whole torso, because a lot of people put their stress in their shoulders and their back and their neck. Any of you do that? Yeah? So, you know, learning how to relax that. And here I find one exercise very helpful, which is to lift your shoulders up as high as you can get them, kind of tuck your chin in, and then let your shoulders fall very hard. And I find that very good for releasing tension. So bring them up, and then like that. Okay? And then also checking, you know, being mindful or aware of the sensations in your neck, your jaw, your facial muscles. Lots of people, their neck is tight, you know, especially if you work at a computer, your neck is like this. I find a lot of people, because of the glasses they wear, have neck pain because their glasses are bifocals. So to see somebody nearby, they have to lift their chin like this. Have you noticed a lot of people doing that nowadays? They don't talk to you straight, but like this. You think, oh, are they being a little bit arrogant? But no, it's not that. It's they're wearing glasses and they're trying to see clearly. But it makes the whole neck and shoulders quite tight. Okay. Sometimes we clench our jaw. We're not even aware of it. So make sure our jaws relaxed. And also our facial muscles. You know, we have this whole thing about putting on a face. And we kind of do, you know, our muscles are, they're tight in some way or another to you know, I don't know what. But if you're aware sometimes of your face, you know, you'll find kind of muscles, you know, or whatever. So being aware of that and relaxing all those things in the body. So there's lots of things that could be going on in our body that provoke tension that we're not even aware of. You know? So some of them could be physical, depending on the work we do. A lot of us aren't very tuned into our body, you know, so we don't pick things up in a proper way, we don't move in a proper way. I'm sure you could tell us much more about that, John. You know, so because we aren't tuned into what's going on in our body, then all of a sudden things get out of whack and we don't quite understand it. So doing some yoga, some Chai Chi, Qigong, something like that can be very helpful. And also just getting regular exercise. And I've really noticed that many people who come to the Abbey, they're not used to moving their bodies. And, you know, being here is a major stretch for them. And they're like, you know, a third of my age. I'm feeling old. But, you know, kind of people whose bodies should be much more active and healthy than mine. But they're kind of panting when I'm doing okay. So, you know, we really need to keep our body healthy. And not simply be couch potatoes. Mm-hmm. Okay, and also to tune into our body so that, you know, if some part of it is getting tense, we know how to discover that and then how to release it. Okay? So very important. And what we were talking about in the meditation hall this afternoon relates to that too. Because lots of times when you're feeling different emotions, you know, there's signals in your body going on beforehand. But if we're not aware of our body, these signals completely miss us. And then we somehow, very suddenly, find ourselves in a state of rage or a state of incredible desire and attachment. And, you know, it's because we're really out of touch with our body and don't know how to recognize the signals going on in our body and how our mental states relate to our body. Okay, so this can be something that's very helpful, just to, you know, tune into our body every once in a while. Okay, and just, you know, when you sit down to eat, in addition to offering your food, which slows down the process, check in with your body and see if your body's relaxed or if you're like this, you know. Same thing when you lie down to sleep. If you're having trouble going to sleep, maybe your body's all tense and you're not even recognizing it. Yeah, so interesting just to tune into the body and let the muscles relax so that it kind of feels like your body's getting heavier, but what you're doing is relaxing the muscles. Okay? So you start off by relaxing your body. And I should say, relaxing our body, we usually think of relaxing as just lying down, you know, sprawling. But you can sprawl and your body could still be quite tense. In the same way that we usually think relaxing the mind means turning on a TV program. But I don't think that's going to relax our mind. It usually makes our mind tighter, you know, because the emotions that the programs are trying to invoke in us. Okay, so don't think that relax just means doing whatever. Yeah. Because we usually think of that. We get so confused. We think mindfulness is, okay,
I've got to be really mindful. What's happening as I'm walking? What's happening as I'm breathing? You'll notice some people, when they meditate, their eyebrows are like this. You know, I've got to be so mindful. I've got to really concentrate. Yeah, that's not mindfulness. That's tension. Okay? That's pushing. That's stress. So we really need to watch out for that, because actual mindfulness and awareness makes us more relaxed, because we're being more in tune. Yeah, when we're not in tune, that's when, you know, we get confused and we think that pushing means mindful, being mindful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do any of you notice when you're meditating that your brows are like this? Focusing, so sorry. You know? Interesting faces people are making. Yeah? Yeah? And that's what I meant by making sure your facial muscles are relaxed. Okay? Okay, so you want to start out just checking in with your body. And then you want to breathe comfortably. Yeah? And let your breath be at an even speed and an even strength. So, different times when you meditate, your natural breathing pattern will be different, because the breath is very related to the mind. It's related to the rest of the body. So what's going on in your mind and your body is going to influence your breath. But at least try at the beginning, yeah, to make sure that you're breathing in a healthy way. And many of us don't, okay? A healthy way of breathing is that your diaphragm is moving when you're inhaling and exhaling. An unhealthy way is that only our upper chest is breathing. And a lot of us, you know, who are habitually stressed or who are addicted to adrenaline in our body, then we're very used to having short breaths, okay? When we have short breaths, it's usually our upper chest that's moving, not our belly, okay? So I'm not talking, when I'm talking about our belly moving, I'm not talking about taking deliberately deep breaths, because you don't want to do that when you're doing breathing meditation. Every once in a while, you're in the hall and you hear somebody go, you know, the whole hall's silent. You're trying to meditate. You can't focus on your own breath because somebody's entertaining you with the sound of their breath. We're not talking about that. Okay? That shouldn't be happening. We shouldn't be making noise with our breath unless, of course, you have allergies or some physical deformity. Your breath should be smooth. But try it for a minute. Put one hand on your belly and one hand on your upper chest. Okay? Now, how you regularly breathe, and see what moves. Okay. Now, breathe in such a way so that your belly moves. So that your belly is going slightly out when you inhale and falling when you exhale. Is your upper chest moving then? No. Now take some breaths where your upper chest is moving. What's the difference between the breaths that you take when your belly's moving and the breaths you take when your upper chest is moving? Yeah, which ones are shallow? Your chest, your upper chest. They're short and they're shallow, aren't they? Yeah. The breathing from your belly is, you know, you get more air in and it's more relaxed, isn't it?
Some of us, at the beginning, it may feel strange because we're so used to breathing from our upper chest. And a lot of it could really have to do if we're just very used to getting these adrenaline rushes. We like to keep ourselves in a state of, you know, pumped up energy. And, you know, that affects our body in a long time, and in the long run, and it affects our breathing pattern. Okay, so you want to make sure that you're breathing in a healthy way. But like I said, you're not doing anything weird, like taking deliberate deep breaths from your belly and making lots of sound. Okay, not like that. Okay? But just try and be mindful, like, where are you breathing? And like I said, you know, at different times when we sit down to meditate, our breathing pattern may be very different. So we don't have to try to deliberately manipulate it, although sometimes we might try and slow it down a little bit. But we don't even have to do that. Sometimes just becoming mindful of how it is that we're breathing. Just, you know, that awareness of what's going on in our body, that automatically helps to settle the breath down. Okay? So in this first meditation, it's called counting the breath. So each cycle of out and in is counted as one. Okay, notice I said one cycle is out and in. We usually think one breath is in and out. So this is a different way of thinking of our breath. Okay, out and in is one breath. Okay, so at each breath you count a number. Okay, they recommend that you go to 10, but you don't go higher than 10, because if you go higher than 10, you're going to get really confused with all the numbers. You know, 11,168, 11,169. You know, you're going to get lost in the counting. So just go to 10. They say don't go less than 10, because if we do, our mind will get slack. Okay, we'll space out pretty quick. It sounds very simple, you know, but it's not actually so easy to count to 10. Because we kind of get one, and then, you know, we think about what we're going to do tomorrow. And we come back over and we start with one again. We maybe get to 1.5, and then we think about what we did yesterday. And we come back again, and then, you know, it's not always so easy. Or you find that maybe you've got the counting down well. Yeah, you can count the numbers well, but you're not really paying attention to each breath. Yeah, it's just you set one part of your mind on automatic for the counting, and the other part of your mind goes traveling throughout the universe. Okay? So here you want to keep your attention on the breath, okay? But be quite aware, you know, that out and in is one. Out and in is two. Yeah?
The attention should follow the cycle.
Right now we're just on counting. I'm going to get to those. Those come in future meditations. Right now we're just on counting. Okay? You can place your attention here at the nostrils and feel the breath as it goes in and out here, if you want to, if that helps you. Some people like to focus their belly. Actually, here in this meditation, it doesn't stress focusing at any particular place in your body. It's rather just focusing on breathing, okay, and on counting the breath. Okay. So again, don't make your mind tight by going to too many and confused. Don't let it get lax by not counting enough. Sometimes we mix up the numbers. sometimes we forget what number we're on. It just happened a second ago that we counted, but we can't remember what number we're on. So even though it's a simple meditation, it's not always so easy to do. Okay? Now, in terms of your posture, yeah, it's good to sit cross-legged if you can. Of course, they recommend the full Vajra if you can, which is your left foot on your right thigh, your right foot on your left thigh. If you can't do that, then you can put your right foot down in front. Okay? This one's still on that thigh. Or you can bring this one down. That's kind of how Tara sits. Okay? Or you can sit like how we sat in grade school, like this. Or you can sit with on a little bench like they do in some of the Zen temples. Or you can sit in a straight back chair. Don't sit in a chair that where you lean back, okay? But try and sit in one with a straight back and, you know, really focus on sitting up straight. If you're in a chair, your feet should be flat on the floor. They shouldn't be crossed, okay? But if you don't need to sit in a chair, don't sit on the floor, okay? Your head is level. You can tuck your chin in just a little bit, but it shouldn't be tucked in like this. Okay? Don't have your chin high, because that leads to distraction. So your head should be level. You know, if anything, it's going to be tucked in just a little bit. Your hands, the right on the left, the thumbs are touching. Yeah, so it makes a triangle, and this is in your lap against your body. Okay? And so when you do that, then there's automatically some space between the side of your body and the inside of your arms, and that allows for more circulation of the air. And this seating posture helps with the internal circulation of your internal winds. Okay? The eyes, lower them. They say sometimes to look at the tip of your nose, but I find that a little bewildering. Or to look just at the space in front of you. But your eyes are just a little bit open, so you actually shouldn't be really looking at anything. The reason you keep your eyes open is to let some light in, because when light comes in, you won't be as drowsy. So especially if you have problems with drowsiness, keep your eyes a little bit open. But your eyes should not be open where you're looking ahead like this, because then you're going to start looking around everything else, and all the sensory stimuli is, you know, really going to be distracting. Okay? So the head should be level, eyes open just a little bit to let some light in, but not really looking at anything, because you're focusing inside on your breath. Okay, you're not focusing outside on what's going on in the room. Mm-hmm. Your back should be straight. That's quite important. You know, a lot of people kind of are just subtly... Well, some people are really slouched. Some people are subtly slouched. Yeah? If you sit and try and meditate like this, you're going to have a lot of problems with drowsiness. So it's really important to sit up straight. So you may need to do things to strengthen your stomach muscles and your back muscles so that you can sit up straight and keep your shoulders level, you know, but they shouldn't be slouched over like this. Some of us are so used to bad posture that we feel we're sitting up straight when we sit like this. Because this is how we usually sit. We're not even aware that, you know, we can straighten our body more. Any of you notice that about yourself? Yeah? Okay. So, as you're doing the breathing, okay, you're really paying attention to each breath. So, as you're exhaling, you know, you're aware, oh, I'm starting to exhale. I am exhaling. The exhalation is about to finish. It has finished. doesn't mean that you're giving yourself a sportscaster running report of the breath with a lot of internal chatter in your mind. It just means that you're being aware of these different stages of the breath. Okay, I'm starting to exhale. It's going on. I can feel that the breath is nearing going out. Oh, it has ended. And then you be aware if there's a pause between that out-breath and the next in-breath. Okay? When you start to breathe in, you become aware, I'm starting to breathe in. I am breathing in. I'm about to finish breathing in. I am finished. Okay? And then similarly, is there a pause between that in-breath, which is completion of your first breath, and then the next out-breath? Okay? So you're aware of all these different stages. Sometimes at the beginning, if you're not used to it, just becoming aware of, you know, out and in, is already enough. Yeah? So you might start with just the awareness of out and in, and see if you can get to 10 on that. Yeah? And then, as you get some success with that, then become more aware of the different stages in the exhalation, the different stages in the inhalation. Okay? And then that slows you down, or it, not necessarily, it slows your mind down in the sense that you have to focus in more detail. So there's less chance for your mind to kind of go traveling in the universe. Okay? So that's what you do for counting this one on counting the breath. That's all the Abhidharma Kosha says about it. One of my teachers, when he taught it, he added some more. And he said, if you concentrate well doing this, then you might reach a point where your thoughts kind of disappear and you're left just with the radiant nature of the mind. Or, you know, you might get to a place where your mind really settles down, and then you can start watching the thoughts. And so at that point it can be interesting to watch, you know, can you sense a thought before you think it? And where was that thought before it was in your mind? And where is it when you are thinking it? And when it stops, where did that thought go to? Okay? So, you know, does the thought just vanish into nothing? It gets you focused on what actually is a thought. Because we're thinking all day long, you know, so much of the time we're thinking. We're not even aware that we're thinking. We usually believe everything we think without examining if a thought is correct and incorrect. We just believe the content of our thought. Okay? And often we're not even aware we're thinking. So let alone being understanding the content of our thought, okay, we aren't even aware of what a thought is. Okay? So that this is getting more advanced. You know, like I said, this wasn't included in the Abhidharma Kosha part. But it can be an interesting thing sometimes just to be observant of. Not to, you know, get really tight about, you know, okay, where's that thought? Yeah. But just to watch it. You know, because you know how sometimes we have these really weird thoughts that like come out of nowhere? Yeah? Yeah? Everybody have pretty weird thoughts sometimes? Like, huh? You know? So it can be interesting. You know, where did that thought come from? Did a thought exist somewhere else and then come into your mind? Before something arises, where is it? And after it ceases, where does it go? If you've studied Majjhimika philosophy, this can get really interesting. Okay. Then so that's the first one, called counting the breath. The second one is called following the breath. And here, your breath, you don't deliberately slow it down, but your breath is slower because hopefully you're more focused. Okay? And so here, when you inhale, you follow the breath in. And you imagine it, after it goes through your nose, that it goes to your heart, to your throat, your heart, your navel, your thighs, the sole of your feet. And then when you exhale, it goes from the sole of your feet up to your navel, your heart, your throat, and back out your nose. Okay? So you're aware of the breath flowing through your whole body. Okay? And when you're doing this, when you do the exhalation part, because you're also visualizing here, in a way, yeah, that when you exhale, you can think of the breath going out a short distance from your body. Okay? So it's not like it just stops here. If you're not very strong, or your attention isn't very strong, then just think the breath goes out a short distance. And then it comes back in when you inhale. Okay? If you're stronger, then you could send the breath out a little bit further in front of you, and then comes back in when you inhale. Okay? But you're really seeing the breath go through your whole body. Now, sometimes people can get confused. Okay, I'm going down here, and then, oh, my legs are crossed, so then does the air go out here? Then it goes in here, you know, to my soul. Now I'm breathing out, so the air has to go out, then it goes in, then it comes out, you know? So we can get a little bit confused that way. I find it easier when you're doing this just to think of your body in a straight position, okay? So that the breath comes in through the nostrils, goes straight down to the soles, comes right back up, you know, and out. Okay, so you're really feeling how the breath is moving through the body. I would say during this, I've tried it a little bit, if I put my attention on the breath and I have my attention going from here and then going down and then going up, it causes a lot of restlessness. Yeah? It's like, you know, have you ever watched the snowfall? And you can either watch the snowfall in front of you, or you can take one snowflake and follow it down. And do you know how it affects you differently when you do that? Okay, some of you come back in the winter, you can try it. Yeah. But when you're following one snowflake down and, you know, it causes a lot of movement. So when you're doing this, don't so much make the focus in your body move that quickly, because that can feel uncomfortable. But rather just, you know, see your body as a whole and feel the air as it goes, you know. Well, first in an out-breath, you know, it's coming up and then going down, okay? So running clear through your body and then out a little bit, you know, short distance, and then in again, okay? So again, you're going to be breathing a little bit slower here because if you're doing fast breaths, there's no chance for the air to move down to your feet. Okay, so that's the second one. That one was called following the breath. The third one is called placing. And here, you're again focusing on the breath from the tip of the nose to the soles of your feet. But you're thinking of the breath here as a very fine thread that is still and immovable. Okay? So it could be a fine thread, it could be just a little, like a filigree, a very thin thread of light even, something very thin, that is running from your nostrils down to the soles of your feet. And so what is in nature the breath is appearing in the form of this very subtle thread. And, you know, the thread's not moving. Yeah, the thread's not, you know, going up and down as you inhale and exhale. It's not moving sideways. It's not having waves and dancing and different things. It's just very still and straight, and that's your breath as it goes, you know, well, you start an out breath as it goes up and out, as it goes in. Okay, so you imagine that thread. And again, a thread of light, don't make it, you know, like a concrete post in the middle of your body. That's not going to work. It's going to be quite uncomfortable.
Okay. Placing.
Pardon me?
Did you say that's called placing?
This one, placing.
Placing.
Yeah, so you're placing your attention on this thread, okay? And while you're doing that, okay, and so this is following. When you do these meditations, you do them in order because they start out the simpler and then get harder, okay? So the placing one, you know, again, it's going from, it's like the previous one, going from the tip of your nose to the soles of your feet. But here it's coming as that very fine thread that is very still, very subtle. And as you're exhaling and inhaling, you're aware of the different sensations along that thread. Okay? So you can, you know, just be aware, is something hot, is it cold, is it comfortable or uncomfortable? So you're beginning to become more aware of internal sensations in your body. Okay? Because we have, you know, a wind element, the Tibetans call it lung, the Chinese call it qi, that flows through the body, you know. It is linked with the very gross breath that comes in our nostrils. But it's a much more subtle kind of breath. And so there's that kind of breath movement going on in our body all the time. And so by starting to focus on the gross external breath, that's going to help get us more in touch with the internal breath. Okay? And so the sensations there as it's, you know, the different sensations along that thread of the breath. So the breath is manifesting as that thread. Okay, so that's the third one called placing. Then the fourth one's called analyzing. So here you're looking at the breathing process. Here you're not looking so much, you're not focusing so much on the out-breath and the in-breath. Okay, as much as you are investigating the breathing process. So one way to do it is to see that the breath isn't just the wind element or the air element, but that it has aspects of all four elements and also the derivatives of the elements. The four elements, earth, water, fire, air, yeah? So sometimes the breath can be heavy, a little bit of earth element. The breath can be moist, a little bit of water element. It can be hot or warm, fire element. You know, and then the movement itself is the wind element. Yeah. We know that the breath, the derivatives are, you know, color and smell, taste, tactile sensation. So, you know, does the wind have color? Today, our air is kind of dusty brown, you know. Maybe what we're breathing in has that you know, the wind has stirred up all the dry dust. You know, we can, sometimes the breath has a scent, yeah. Sometimes it can have a taste. It has a tactile sensation. So you know, really be aware of, you're analyzing the breath here and really seeing the four elements, the four derivatives. So you're getting more into, like, well, what is breath? What is this wind element? Okay. And it can become very interesting, because while an element is within our body, we feel like it's me. But when the same element is outside of our body, it doesn't feel like it's me. Okay? So when we inhale, kind of the air's inside, and you know, it goes in the package of what we call me. When that same air gets blown outside, it's not me anymore. And then somebody else can actually inhale that same breath that came, or that same air, that same wind, that came out of our body. Mm-hmm. So we begin to see how our body is quite impermanent. The air, the breath is going in and out. You know, here's the wind element. Yeah, it's not completely me, because I breathe it out. And when I breathe it out, somebody else breathes it in. And I'm breathing in the wind element that was in somebody else's body. So what's somebody else's body and what's my body? Okay. And by extrapolation, it doesn't talk about this here, but I also find it, you know, when you're doing more of this kind of analytic meditation, how we might see, like, the hardness, the earth element. You know, you see, let's say, some broccoli growing in the garden. Yeah, there's broccoli, the earth element, you know, the hardness. Yeah. That's not me. That broccoli's not me. But it's interesting, as soon as we put it in our mouth and chew it and it goes into our stomach, it's kind of me, isn't it? Yeah. And then it actually gets changed, and that same earth element goes in and nourishes all my cells. And then it's really me, isn't it? And some of it comes out as poop the next day or the day after. And then that part's not me anymore. But you know, while it's in me, it feels like me. Especially if you're constipated. Yeah. Okay? So it gets quite interesting observing, what do I consider me and what do I consider not me? Hmm? When I eat that broccoli and it's breaking down and it's going to nourish all my cells, is it me? Or is it my body? When we look at the broccoli out there, it doesn't look like my body. But then it can change into my body. Or, you know, I just had a big blister. The doctor drained it with a needle. When I looked at it, you know, the blister, that's my body, this big thing on my foot. When the doctor extracted all this fluid, then that's not my body. But it's the same stuff. It's just very interesting. You know, it gets us to think, what do I consider me and what do I consider my body? Because often our image of our body is this thing that is just very solid, very intact. You know, like our skin is some kind of impermeable box, and nothing comes in, nothing goes out. And everything bounded by this skin is me, this big, permanent me. Right? Yeah? So somebody comes and goes like that, you're touching me! Yeah? Yeah? But if we had our hand amputated, the hand is sitting on the table and somebody touched it, we wouldn't say, you're touching me. So it gets very interesting here. What do we consider me? What do we consider my body? Because my body doesn't feel like it's just a bunch of earth, water, fire, air, you know, broccoli, spaghetti, and chocolate cake. It, you know, it feels like it's not just that, is it? It's there's me in here. It's me, or it's mine. There's, you know, the me, the me-ness, the my-ness. That's much more evident to us than the broccoli and spaghetti. Yeah. When you look in the mirror at your face, do you think, oh, that's broccoli and spaghetti transformed? Do you think that?
No.
No. Is your face the transformation of broccoli and spaghetti? If you eat broccoli and spaghetti, it sure is. If you have eaten ham and eggs, then your face is a transformation of ham and eggs. But it's true, isn't it? You don't look like you're convinced. We have this feeling about our body. I mean, if we look at just that reality of our body, that's really what it is. But our gut feeling about our body is not that. Our gut feeling about this body, is it it's me, or it's, you know, mine, or it's made of some kind of magic material that's, you know, unrelated to the cauliflower. And the cauliflower isn't related to the dirt. We don't think of our body as a transformation of that soil. You know all the soil that you shoveled when we into the garden in the spring when we got the new soil? That soil's in our body now. That soil is me, if we say this is me. But we don't think I'm a bunch of dirt. We think I'm beautiful. Yeah? We have some pretty strange notions, don't we? Don't we? Okay, so we start really, you know, examining what is... Here, it's focusing on the breath in particular. I extrapolated to the body because I like that, doing that. I find that quite interesting. I also find interesting, I'll tell you this. When you look, you know, especially you're eating in community, and you put some salad on your plate, and the person next to you puts salad on their plate, and the salad you eat is going to become... your body that you become very attached to. Yeah. The salad our friend next to us eats is going to become part of their body that we aren't very attached to, at least not in the same way. We might be attached to them if they're very good looking or something, but in the sense of this being me or mine. And yet, you know, we so easily could have switched plates of salad, couldn't we? Yeah? So, you know, you eat my plate and I eat your plate. And then that becomes each of our bodies that we then feel are me or mine. But it's just salad. And the salad could have been exchanged and we could have been eating something else. So that the salad we ate, why do we get so attached to it and call it me or my body when somebody else could have eaten it and it would have been them and their body? Yeah. So when you examine like this, then you really begin to notice how we use the words me and my and what import those words have. And even though they're just words, even though they're just labels, wow, we imbue them with a whole lot more memory, you know, meaning. So the same thing here with the air, you know? What somebody else breathes out, I breathe in. And then, oh, it's my breath. You sneezed, you're contaminating my breath. Yeah? Because if it's, you you know, if I'm going to breathe in, we have this idea, if I'm going to breathe in this air that's right here, and you sneeze and put germs, this breath, because I'm already ready, set to breathe it in, it's already mine. Okay, even though it's still outside, but you sneezed and you contaminated it. Okay? Or if somebody didn't sneeze, they just breathe out, and there's, you know, the virus or the bacteria in their breath. Oh, you're contaminating my breath. But it's actually their breath. But it's in their body. So are we stealing their breath? Yeah? So it's very interesting to give us some insight on how we use the word my and mine. Okay, let's stop here for questions, if you have any questions. Yeah?
I have a couple. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When you're sitting, how do you sit so that, you know, your back doesn't get that tension? Because that's always like... Uh-huh. I feel like I don't slouch so much now, mm-hmm. but I just still have like this kind of tension in my back.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're not slouching, but you want to be able to sit without tension in your back.
Like, how straight do you sit? Like, you know, when you're like, okay, I'm sitting straight, but then you kind of have to still be relaxed to, in order to...
Yeah, well, straight doesn't mean, you know, you're in the army, not like this, okay. But straight should be able to be relaxed. But you need to strengthen, you know, your muscles in there too. And if your muscles aren't strong in your belly and your back, then it's going to be very hard to sit up straight. And, you know, and even you're sitting up straight, it's going to feel like you're in the army. Mm-hmm. It's going to feel, because you're so used to this. Yeah. Oh, one thing that they say is good is to think that there's, instead of feeling like you're having to sit up straight from here, to feel that there is a little string pulling on your spine from here. And if you feel like, oh, okay, something's pulling me up and straightening me, then you're not so tense when you straighten your body.
I like the, when you talk about the breath coming out, I kind of been putting a plant in front of me.
Uh-huh.
Because of, you know, like big carbon dioxide, oxygen,
yeah. Right.
It always kind of like brings me back to like interdependence,
uh-huh.
that whole idea.
Yeah.
So like when you were saying like bring your breath out, like mm-hmm. imagine it coming out, I was like think like, okay, I'm recycling and mm-hmm. gaining something at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you can be thinking like that, that, you know, you're exhaling the carbon dioxide and it's going to nourish the plants and they're putting off oxygen, which is going to nourish you. And really seeing, yeah, you how interdependent we are. Mm-hmm.
When you're counting the breath, do you count, let's say, you get to three and then you run longer?
Uh-huh.
When you come back, you start from one again?
Yeah, you start all over if you get distracted. That's why they say, see if you can make it till 10. Yeah?
Well, how long do you spend on each part? What determines when you move on?
Oh, okay. So there's a lot of flexibility here. You can stay with one meditation for a whole session. You can stay with one meditation for some weeks and months before moving on to the next one. Or if you want to, you can work with one of them in, you know, for part of a session and then move on, if your mind is calmer, to the second one and then move on to the third one. So there's different ways of playing with it. If you're really going to get some success with it, then it's good to kind of master one before going on to the next. But like I said, sometimes it's interesting just to do one after the other and see where you get. Mm-hmm.
When we're doing this type of analysis of the breath in the body, mm-hmm. I feel like one of the reasons that we cling to these ideas of I and mind is because, you know, the air or the broccoli or the dirt becomes mixed with the other four skandhas. Mm-hmm. So when it's the soil outside, you know, it's just the form skanda, but then when we imbibe it, then it mixes with feeling and perception, and we have a much more direct conscious experience of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's almost, to me, kind of gives me some, like, defensiveness about, like, well, it is mine because now I'm conscious of it. So, how do we combat that?
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So there is this feeling that, you know, the broccoli comes inside and it becomes part of my body, and my body is linked to my consciousness, and I experience pain and pleasure and neutral feelings with this body. So now this broccoli, or the transformation of the broccoli, really is mine. Okay. I remember, and so you're asking, well, you know, isn't that right? Isn't it mine? Isn't there some reason to be defensive about it? Because this is mine. It's not yours. Yeah. Well, one thing to watch and to really see is that how impermanent our body is, and how everything in our body is getting recycled all the time. Yeah. And so they say that all of our cells are rejuvenated in each 7 years, we have an entire new set of cells. So even looking that way, what is there that's some kind of stable me or some kind of stable body that's worthy of being attached to? Yeah. And that question about, you know, well, it's linked with my consciousness, so now I feel pain or pleasure due to what's happened to that broccoli, you know. That broccoli now... It's funny, isn't it, to think of your body, you know? Like, just imagine this big heap of spaghetti and broccoli and ice cream and, you know, everything just heaped in front of you. And then, like a cartoon, it goes whoop and it becomes your body. But that's kind of what happens, isn't it? You know, I mean, more through a physical process. But it is. It's just all that stuff piled up there, and then whoop, you change, you transform it and throw out a bunch of stuff as your pee and your poo, and that's what remains. And then, of course, we're sloughing cells off all the time, and, you know, everything in the body's changing. But, you know, how little we are aware of that. I mean, every time we drink water and then pee, look at how much change is going on in our body. But we don't feel like my body's changing. You know? It just all feels so concrete, doesn't it? And then also what I find is very interesting that you brought up is it gets mixed with the four skandhas in the sense that now this broccoli is causing me pain or pleasure, you know? When this broccoli transforms into a hangnail, you know, then it's causing me pain. When this broccoli transforms into my skin and I pet a kitty, then the broccoli is causing, you know, bringing me pleasure. Very peculiar. And why am I so attached to the sensations of this particular body? And, you know, what's the relationship between the I and the body? Why do I even call it my body? And, you know, Shantideva, when he talks about in Chapter 8 of Gaito Bodhisattva's Way of Life, when he talks about exchanging self and others, he brings up this whole issue about, you know, why are we so attached to this body? Why not be as attached to somebody else's body? And, you know, our answer is, well, because I feel what's happening with this body. And Shantideva says, that's nice, but that's basically habit. Because your body is actually the sperm and blood of your parents and all the stuff you've eaten. So none of it is actually yours. So why are you so attached to what's happening to it? It's a good question.
So if we're actually able to analyze in this way and, like, you know, really start to eradicate that clinging to it, then do we become conscious of the bodies of others, like the internal experiences of others?
Then, okay, should we become, if we lessen the
habit of,
yeah, of clinging to our body, do we become aware of the internal physical experiences of others? Probably not instantly. I would assume if you have some kind of psychic power, you might. But you would still notice the physical sensations in your body. But they wouldn't be me so much. There wouldn't be so much reactivity to them. It would just be their sensations. Yeah. Right now, we feel some sensation, and boy, you know, not only do we feel it, but we make up some story about it. You know, I have a hangnail, and I have to give a talk for an hour, and it hurts, and I want to cut it off, but I can't in the middle of this talk, and what are people going to think of me, and every time I touch it, it hurts, and, you know, and it's a hangnail, for goodness sake. So, you know how we get so attached to everything that our body experiences, you know? So to lessen that feeling of I and mine actually can give us a lot of freedom.
Mm-hmm. So when someone has a direct perception of dependent arising, that they see that spaghetti and broccoli and all of that stuff, that they see that...
Okay, so somebody has a good understanding of dependent arising, would they see the spaghetti and the broccoli? They would see, you know, kind of the change that happened, you know, from earth to spaghetti and broccoli to body to, you know, skin cells, and the skin cells get sloughed off and get recycled in one way, and dead cells get recycled in another way, and actually none of it is there to really consider me in the long run. Mm. Yeah?
I'll just say, look at science. Like, if you just look at the cycle, even like with the weather and how rain comes, and like, mm-hmm. if you just look at the science of it, then you could kind of already understand that, but not in a kind of Google kind of way, but just regular.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very much. Contemplate the science. Yeah. Brian, did you have something?
I was just trying to get it through my mind. Since we're so interdependent, and we're all just a bunch of vibrating cells, really, I'm just trying to think, how did our consciousness, our mind stream, become individualized? If we're all interconnected, why is what I'm thinking mine? It became, you know, the flow from the beginning of this time.
Yeah.
It's now in this body. I don't think John Bellick can, you know, maybe he's clairvoyant. I don't know. Maybe that's where clairvoyancy comes in. Uh-huh. But why is it individualized?
Okay. Well, it's just the nature of something. Something has a substantial cause and a continuity. So the mind stream has a continuity of that. In that stream, one moment of consciousness leads to another moment of consciousness. But it is true that as we go from one life to the next, you might have human mental aggregates in this life and the mental aggregates of a deva in the next life and the mental aggregates of an animal in the following life. So, you know, not only the body changes, but also the mental aggregates change. But what there is that continuity of, you know, consciousness, of clarity and awareness. Okay. Do we have to stop now or over time? So work with these meditations this week. Yeah, and then we'll continue next week, hopefully.
May the spiritual teachers illuminate me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual masters be stable. and their divine actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of your son's teachings dispel in the darkness of the beings in the 3 worlds always increase. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born of no decline, but increase forevermore.